before the break, we remembered the late Doris Bunty, who was the first Black woman elected as Massachusetts state representative. One part of Bunty's legacy, she is credited with being a driving force behind funding for Roxbury Community College. Well, it turns out that another Black pioneer led the design and building of Roxbury Community College, and we want to remember him now. In fact, if the Ruggles MPTA station, Boston Police Headquarters, maybe the Harriet Tubman House before it was demolished, if those buildings or RCC are part of your neighborhood landscape, then you have been affected by the work of Donald Stull and his teams of architects. And those are just a few examples of their buildings. Stull was a true pioneer, founding two firms owned and run by Black architects. When he founded the first, Stull and Associates, the best indication was there were only about a dozen Black architects in the country. Now, Donald Stull passed away late last year, and we wanted to make sure that we took time to recognize his life and legacy. So to do that, we recently caught up with his friend and partner, M. David Lee. Lee worked at Stull & Associates and then co-founded Stull & Lee with Donald Stull. To get a sense of what it was like working with Stull, I started by asking M. David Lee whether they had worked on Roxbury Community College together.
Yes, we did. And in fact, it was in addition to what we think was a sound planning and urban design objective, it also had a political dimension too, because the notion was, if you put that kind of investment, which was a lot of money in those days, $30 million or so, into a facility there, it wasn't likely that people would wait for the noise to die down around stopping the highway and simply build a highway anyway. So once you had made that kind of a footprint, it wasn't likely that the highway would ever come into fruition. So it did have that kind of a political consequence. Also, its virtual location in the heart of Roxbury was very important because the community could own it. And it was designed in a way to maximize community interaction in terms of the theater building, the library. It was meant to be a community-oriented facility.
I want to talk now about your partnership with Donald Stull. You met him when you were studying at the Harvard Graduate School of Design. You went then to Stull Associates seeking a summer job. Why? Why did you want him to hire you? And why do you think he did?
Well, first, actually, I met him before I started school. I had been admitted to the Graduate School of Design. So I came I got an interview with Don, went to the office, and we started talking. And it was just a real clicking of ideas. And we just hit it off. And he was interested in having me. I was interested in working with him, because I was also looking to really figure out how to use design and architecture and planning as a way of bridging some of the social challenges we were facing as a nation. So right in the middle of all of the unrest in the 60s, for example, I'm in central Illinois studying architecture, but the cities were coming apart. And so I determined that I needed to get more involved on the planning and urban design side. And that's when I applied to Harvard and came to Boston. And so part of what was happening with Don was, you know, the idea of actually bringing a Black awareness and social awareness to design and planning. And so that was an office where I could see those things coming together.
What do you think the two of you did differently than most architects by bringing this Black awareness to design and architecture?
Well, it was, and it continues to be, a search to figure out how to creatively represent ethnic backgrounds in architecture. There are certain elements of architecture that are universal and other things that allow for a lot of creativity and interpretation. So part of what we did was to really listen to what the community said, and then to try to interpret those ideas into things that were relatable to ordinary people. So while we aspired to the highest in design quality and standards, we also felt that you could do that and still infuse in it an awareness of community issues and so forth. I think we also understood that we had to find a way to relate to people who never really had a voice in terms of design, or understanding that they could shape the way in which their spaces would be designed, because frankly, they hadn't seen any people of color doing it. And in most cases, people were renters rather than owners. So they didn't have a lot of voice in how spaces got designed. I often use a parallel around music. And I talk about the song, My Favorite Things. There is a version by Julie Andrews, and there's also a version by John Coltrane. Same song, but very different DNA, and I like them both. But so what we were trying to do was to figure out how to take what had ordinarily been kind of a white Anglo-Saxon male-dominated aesthetic and figure out how one could introduce another interpretation of those forms.
So I want to ask you, given the way you just described the two of your work, do you have an iconic memory of Donald Stull that would really bring him alive for the rest of us who didn't know him?
Wow, it's tough to try to pick one. He was he could be funny. He was intellectual. He was stubborn. He fought for what he believed in, sometimes to a fault. I can't remember any single things. I mean, he was just a presence, and it was fun to be around. And he dressed in an interesting way. I mean, he was well-dressed and so forth. He loved his art. He was really very involved in art and a collector and friend of artists and so forth.
I feel like that gave me a sense of him.
Yeah.
I feel like that does. I'm smiling because I kind of get that feel. All right, so last question for you. You know, you guys were trailblazers. Mm-hmm. When he first established the Stull Associates, there were only believed to be a dozen Black architects in the mm-hmm. entire United States. The two of you founded a firm at a time when Black architects were scarce. Now we fast forward. As of 2019, African-American architects still only represent about 2% of all the licensed architects. And our understanding is that African-American women, you know, that's what, 0.4%, according to the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards.
The numbers are shockingly low.
So yeah. So that's the word that came to us, too, was shockingly low. So what does the mm-hmm. field need to do differently? Because the processes that you talked about that you were so committed to need to be brought to more communities. And one would assume that increasing the diversity of those who do building and design will increase the diversity of approaches that serve communities. So what do we do?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is get out of our silos and with assumptions of what is what various ethnic groups or genders are capable of doing. You know, whether this is a girl's role or I mean, if you go back, you look at advertising, women were always put into one particular section of advertising. And there are any number of places where people are put in these kinds of silos. And so, you know, all we ever really wanted was an opportunity to compete and to compete on any level, but everywhere. I used to always say that, you know, when we took our final exams in school, they never told us we could skip certain chapters or pages. We had to answer all the questions just like everyone else. So then if that's the case, then why aren't we at least capable of designing a hotel if we can design affordable housing, or work in Wellesley if we can work in Jamaica Plain. Mm. So I'm always trying to break out of that stereotype. I also often talk about a setting I heard from Keith Jarrett, a piano player, played with Miles, and they finished a set one night at Paul's Mall, a famous jazz club here in Boston. And Keith Jarrett asked Miles why he hadn't played certain familiar tunes. And Miles, in his raspy voice, said, "Because I love them too much." And the point was that Miles always was wanted to work outside of his comfort zone and continue to push in new directions. And I think if clients were more open to the idea of diversity and the fact that bringing different voices and strategies, opinions, just different eyes to an issue may actually enrich it. It may be, you know, it's not a zero-sum game. Everybody can gain from having more voices at the table.
And that is M. David Lee, architect and head of Stull and Lee Incorporated, the Boston-based architecture firm. His partner, Donald Stull, passed away late last year. Thanks, David. I appreciate you talking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.